Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry today. Well, we just spent some time talking about how many of the presidential candidates are all but ignoring climate change in the campaign. So if they're not campaigning on it, part of the question becomes, what kind of political landscape will the next president face for climate change action? What will they actually be able to do? The backdrop to all of this, of course, is going to be the Paris Climate Accords negotiated back in September. That requires every country to submit a plan to cut carbon emissions in the next 5 years. And that's exactly where President Obama has run into trouble. His 2014 regulations to cut carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants have been stopped by the courts. Meanwhile, in Congress, Republican opposition to climate change intervention is nearly universal still. So what does the next president face, and does the American public even have the will to demand that their leaders take action on climate change? For some answers, we turn to David Sandilow. He's the inaugural fellow at Columbia University Center on Global Energy Policy. He served in multiple senior positions at the White House, at the State Department, and the U.S. Department of Energy. David Sandilow, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
I just mentioned the Paris Climate Agreement, which will still be in effect when the next president takes office. Why is that so important to whatever strategy the next president takes, if any, on climate change?
Well, Todd, the Paris Climate Agreement represents a remarkable global consensus on the need to address climate change and a path forward on doing it. And 150 heads of state traveled to Paris for that conference. Not a single one of those heads of state questioned the science of climate change or the need to do anything about it. And it set forth a set of procedures for countries to develop national action plans to address climate change, to strengthen them over time. Most analysts believe that the measures that were brought to Paris were a step forward, but not enough. So, you know, the fight against climate change, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's something that's going to require the work of at least a generation or two. And the Paris Agreement sets in place a structure for doing that.
Right. But that marathon, at least here at home, isn't getting off to much of a start. I just mentioned that President Obama's coal emission regulations have been stopped by the courts. Congress, in order to make the Paris Agreement binding, would have to get involved and agree to a consensus and pass some bills. That's basically impossible right now. So when the next president comes into the Oval Office, what's the state of play?
Well, first on those regulations for coal-fired power plants that you mentioned, they've been temporarily stayed by the courts, to use a legal term. But I think most legal experts believe that in the end, they're going to be upheld. And they would then impose some measures that will help us reduce our emissions from coal-fired power plants.
David Sandilow, all of that will be for naught if the next president, let's say President Ted Cruz or President Donald Trump, come in and tear up all of those regulations altogether, which they may do.
Right. Well, there's no question that the Republican candidates on the campaign trail have staked out some positions that are quite contrary to, you know, taking on the challenge of climate change. And I think we'll have to, if they're elected, we'll have to see what happens. One possibility is certainly that they will do what they said on the campaign trail. But if they do that, I think they're going to face some significant challenges. And you know, governing is different than campaigning. One challenge they're going to face is they would be extraordinary outliers in the global community if they step out of the Paris Agreement and totally reject the need to take on climate change. And if it is President Cruz or President Trump, they're going to need allies in Europe and in Asia on a variety of different priorities that they have. And they'll find out that if they snub their nose at the global community, which has spoken so loudly on this issue, that there'll be costs. They will also discover that it is not necessarily easy to change federal regulations once they've been promulgated. We have laws and procedures for that. It's possible that they would do that, but it's not something they could do with a stroke of a pen.
David Sandilow, there's another reality that's behind all this. When you look at the polls, regardless of party, climate change is still way down on the list of priorities for voters, Republican or Democrat. And that makes me wonder about the real strength of the political mandate and what voters are going to demand from the next president in terms of climate change.
No, I think that's a very good point, Todd. You know, climate change is just about as difficult a political issue as there can be. You know, this is a problem that is caused by invisible, odorless gases. And although it is proceeding at a pace that scientists say is alarming, it can be difficult to see in day-to-day life. So this is a topic that challenges our political system. You know, we've seen extraordinary movement towards young people on this issue, and the support for taking action on this from young people around the country is pretty strong. So I think we'll just have to see in the years ahead. whether there'll be the political support for taking the action that we need on this issue.
Elections do have a way of resetting political priorities. It's hard to tell which ones when you're at this stage in a campaign. But do you see any tangible signs of movement among candidates, in particular Republicans, but also in Democrats in the level of detail or the level of political capital they're willing to stake on major climate change action in the next 8 years?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think both the Democratic candidates have spoken out strongly and repeatedly on this issue, and it's been a real priority for them. And then it's very interesting what's happening at the state level around the country right now. At the state level, some of the ideology gets stripped away, and the clean energy economy is creating jobs all around this country. And the interesting dynamic, actually 4 years ago, when Mitt Romney came out in opposition to some tax credits for wind power, the Republican delegation in the state of Iowa and the Republican governor strongly criticized him for that because Iowa not only has lots of wind power generating electricity, but there's a lot of jobs in that sector. There are now twice as many jobs in the solar industry in the United States as there are in the coal industry. And I think as that momentum develops, we're going to see a lot of political support for this transition.
David Sandilow, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Todd.
David Sandilow held senior positions at the White House, the State Department, and the U.S. Department of Energy. He's now the inaugural fellow at Columbia University Center on Global Energy Policy.